This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Welcome, welcome to CBS Mornings on this Thursday, March 24th. I'm Gail King.
I'm Nate Burleson.
And I'm Vladimir Dutier. President Biden is in Belgium meeting with our NATO G7 and European Union allies. They're looking for the best way to help Ukraine without escalating the war. 1 month into the conflict, we're seeing new signs that Ukraine is holding off Russian advances into most of its major cities, and in some cases, pushing back Russian troops from positions they've held. Holly Williams is inside Ukraine, and Ed O'Keefe is with the president in Brussels. Ed, let's begin with you. So what is the president doing this morning?
Well, Vlad, good to see you. He's here at NATO headquarters meeting with the leaders of the 29 other member nations. Later, he'll meet with leaders of the G7 and the European Council. All of this designed to send a strong message of defiance to Russia's president, Vladimir Putin.
We are united in condemning the Kremlin's unprovoked aggression and in our support for Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity.
An extraordinary show of unity at NATO headquarters in Belgium as the 30 member states are here for their first face-to-face talks about Russian aggression in Ukraine. The summit is set to feature an address by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, a major test for the alliance as it grapples with how to appropriately respond to the invasion of his country, which isn't a NATO member. NATO's chief announced Wednesday the alliance is doubling its troop deployment along its eastern flank, sending four new battle groups to Bulgaria, Hungary, Romania, and Slovakia. And today, members are expected to agree on even more for Ukraine, including increased cybersecurity support and equipment to protect against chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear threats. A White House official tells CBS News that President Biden's package of $800 million in military assistance to Ukraine, including anti-aircraft and anti-tank systems, began arriving in the country on Wednesday. And the State Department now formally believes Russian forces have committed war crimes in Ukraine.
Expressing solidarity is not enough. So from NATO, we expect that there would be the pledge that NATO will stand by Ukraine.
Ukraine's ambassador to NATO told us yesterday she expects President Zelensky's message to the alliance will be tough and direct.
Let us make brave decisions now, because this is the time where is the issue of other countries' survival is at stake.
So in essence, his message to NATO is do more and do it faster.
Absolutely.
Also on the agenda today, new sanctions expected against members of Russia's parliament. And amid all the talk of new NATO force deployments, we may get a sense of how many more American troops will be redeployed or sent here to Europe. Nate?
Ed O'Keefe in Brussels, thank you. Ukrainians have suffered immensely in this war, but it appears that the conflict is not going well for Russia's forces. By some estimates, they've already lost as many troops in 28 days as they did in 10 years of war in Afghanistan. Holly Williams is about 100 miles west of the capital, Kyiv. Holly, good morning.
Good morning. We were here when Russia launched its first missiles and airstrikes a month ago today. But instead of a lightning invasion, Russian forces appear to have stalled, with Ukraine claiming it's killed six Russian generals and even destroyed a Russian Navy ship this morning. The human cost of this war, though, is horrifying.
If Vladimir Putin thought he'd score an easy victory in Ukraine, he knows better now. In just 1 month, between 7 and 15,000 Russian soldiers have been killed, according to a NATO official. The Ukrainians are still outgunned, yet in some places they're clawing back territory from the invaders. But the cost of this brutal invasion is being paid in the lives of civilians. The besieged city of Mariupol has been laid to waste by Putin's forces, with more than 100,000 people still thought to be trapped inside. 15-year-old Masha made it out of Mariupol, but had her right leg amputated after it was torn apart in a Russian strike. Her doctor says she's so traumatized she couldn't eat for days.
It breaks my heart, hearts of all Ukrainians, and every free person on the planet.
That's in a video message last night, Ukraine's president Volodymyr Zelensky accused Russia of trying to wipe Ukrainians off the face of the earth.
This is only the beginning for Russia on the Ukrainian land.
In the city of Zhytomyr, Serhiy is sifting through the wreckage of his home. He spent 12 years building it for his family, he told us, but Russian airstrikes destroyed it earlier this month, killing four in his neighbourhood. One of them was Serhiy's daughter, Katya, who's left behind a one-year-old daughter. I wish I'd died in her place, Serhiy told us. The pain doesn't go away.
Who do you blame for this?
Of course I blame Putin, he said. If I had him in my hands, I'd butcher him like a goat. Serhiy says he'll raise his granddaughter, and like other Ukrainians, he's determined to rebuild. In the shattered city of Kharkiv this week, a cellist played in the rubble, creating beauty even amid the terror of this ugly war. This is a country where the will to survive and fight for freedom at any cost is simply staggering. In that video message, President Zelensky called on people all over the world to protest against Russia's invasion. And he said that Ukraine has not received the aircraft and modern air defense systems that it wants from its allies. Vlad.
Holly, my heart simply breaks for Serhiy and his family and all Ukrainians who are suffering through this. Thank you for your reporting. We appreciate it. While the world's eyes are on the war in Ukraine, South Korea says North Korea tested an intercontinental ballistic missile overnight. It landed in the waters off of Japan's western coast. Japan says the missile reached an altitude of more than 3,700 miles, suggesting it could be a new type of missile. If confirmed, this would be North Korea's first ICBM launch since 2017. The U.S. condemned the test, saying it needlessly raises tensions in the region.
Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's Supreme Court confirmation hearing wraps up later today. Tensions and emotions ran high yesterday when Jackson faced some of the toughest questions yet from Republican senators, who did a lot of the talking.
So you're not going to answer my question?
No, I've answered your question in my answer.
You haven't answered my question. I'm sitting here asking you and you're declining to answer.
Good.
Cut.
Good.
I understand.
Absolutely good. I hope you are.
To do.
Good.
Allow her to finish, please.
In that chart.
Okay, Judge, you said that before. These are the 8 or 9 child porn cases. I will say to correct the record.
I just say to the judge, there's no point in responding. He's going to interrupt you.
Thank you. Look,
Nicole Killian is in the hearing room on Capitol Hill. Nicole, I watched a lot of the hearings yesterday. It was very painful to watch a lot yesterday afternoon. What can you tell us about the plan for the final day?
Well, the plan today is that Judge Jackson won't be in the hot seat as a panel of experts testify after an emotional and exhaustive hearing with searing attacks on the first black woman who is likely to be confirmed to the Supreme Court.
I love this country because I love the law.
Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson welled up on her final day of questioning.
The chairman refused to allow a witness to answer a question. You can bang it as loud as you want.
It was punctuated by several contentious exchanges, beginning with South Carolina's Lindsey Graham, who needled the judge over everything from whether she watched Justice Brett Kavanaugh's hearings.
He was ambushed. How would you feel if we did that to you?
To relentless questioning over her sentencing record in child exploitation cases.
Wait, Judge. You think it is a bigger deterrent to take somebody who's on a computer looking at sexual images of children in the most disgusting way is to supervise their computer habits versus putting them in jail?
No, Senator, I didn't say versus.
That's exactly what you said.
To see the badgering of this woman as she's trying to testify.
I thought was outrageous.
To people who felt your line of questioning was inappropriate, you say what?
That she would not answer my question.
It was a refrain echoed by other committee Republicans relitigating the same claims.
I'm sitting here asking you, and you're declining to answer.
I've explained how the guidelines work. Judges all over the country are grappling with how to apply this guideline. Do you have other questions for me?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Senators on both sides of the aisle tried to turn down the dial.
I'm going to try and spread some aloha into this room.
I think we should recognize that the jackassery we often see around here is partly because of people mugging for short-term camera opportunities.
But it was New Jersey's Cory Booker who delivered this closing argument.
And you did not get there because of some left-wing agenda? You got here how every black woman in America who's gotten anywhere has done. You have earned this spot. You are worthy. You are a great American.
There were other notable issues raised. For instance, Judge Jackson said she would recuse herself from an upcoming Supreme Court case involving her alma mater, Harvard, if she is confirmed. The committee is expected to vote on her nomination April 4th. Nate?
Nicole, thank you. I must say the words of Senator Cory Booker were powerful.
It was very powerful. It was so tough, I thought, yesterday to watch, regardless of how you feel about her. It felt so personal watching her being really attacked for something that has nothing to do with the job that she's going to do. That's the thing that got me. Lindsey Graham, many of these people voted for her several times, and now all of a sudden, the way she was treated, I thought, was very difficult to watch.
Yeah, I think the word attack is a fitting word.
Yeah.
All right, this morning, we look back at the incredible, and I mean incredible, life of Madeleine Albright, the first woman to serve as U.S. Secretary of State. She died yesterday of cancer. She was 84. Albright served 4 years at the State Department under President Bill Clinton. We'll talk with him shortly about her legacy. But first, Chief Washington correspondent Major Garrett shows us how a former refugee from authoritarian rule rose to become a global defender of democracy.
I, Madeleine Corbell Albright,
do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
Madeleine Albright became Secretary of State in 1997, at the time the highest-ranking woman ever in American government. Albright rose from U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, where she backed NATO bombing to halt war crimes against Bosnian Muslims. She had a reputation for tough talk, like this after Cuba shot down two U.S. civilian planes flown by exiles.
This is not cojones. This is cowardice.
Albright was born in Czechoslovakia in 1937. Her family was forced to flee the Nazis and then communism, coming to America as refugees in 1948. As Secretary of State, she clashed with Saddam Hussein in Iraq and became the highest-ranking U.S. official to meet North Korea's Kim Jong-il. Albright mixed it up well with men, but looked out for women.
Just remember, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other.
Albright became known the world over for her brooches. She called them her pins, worn to convey her mood.
So when people would say, "What are you doing today?" I'd say, "Read my pins."
General Colin Powell.
One of Albright's last public appearances was delivering a eulogy at Colin Powell's funeral.
For his virtues were Homeric: honesty, dignity, loyalty, and an unshakable commitment to his calling and word.
Former President Clinton called Albright a passionate force for freedom, democracy, and human rights.
I am often asked, am I an optimist or a pessimist? I reply that I'm an optimist who worries a lot.
Major Garrett, CBS Mornings, Washington.
Bill Clinton will join us a little bit later in this broadcast to talk about how he wants Madeleine Albright to be remembered. They were very close friends and, of course, colleagues. Turning to South Florida, where the city of Miami Beach has declared a state of emergency, after another outbreak of violence there during spring break, midnight curfews have been extended through at least the weekend to try and keep people off the streets. This latest incident involved a shooting that sent visitors while scrambling for their lives. Manuel Bohorquez is in Miami Beach with more on the story.
Oh!
gunfire on a packed South Beach street sent crowds of visitors and spring breakers running for cover. This was just one of two shootings that happened this past weekend.
We've had five people shot on our streets in the middle of Miami Beach. There's nothing to discuss. This is a public safety emergency.
This video shows officers in golf carts trapped by a crowd of partygoers. Nine officers have been injured. Dan Gelber is the mayor of Miami Beach.
I know it sounds unusual for a mayor of a destination city to say this, but we don't want spring break.
Authorities have impounded 100 firearms over the last month. And it's not just in Miami Beach. There were at least 10 mass shootings across the U.S. this past weekend alone.
So we can't really just stop people from coming onto the city, but we can implement a curfew which makes them less likely to want to be here.
The emergency declaration sets a curfew from midnight to 6 a.m. every night through Monday and bars some alcohol sales after 6 p.m. Wayne and Alicia Lanier are visiting from Birmingham, Alabama.
As moms and dads, we understand that sometimes you have to implement punishment. Curfew is the right thing to do. I'm okay with it.
But there are critics, some in the business community who stand to lose money, and others who say the city's actions unfairly target the largely black crowds.
How do you respond to critics who say that this is unfairly targeting young black visitors?
Well, it's targeting young people that are here and acting in a way that they shouldn't. So it's obviously targeting behavior and nothing else.
Of the injured officers and five shooting victims, none is said to have life-threatening injuries. That curfew will be lifted on Monday, but the mayor said if necessary, they will bring it back. Gail?
All right, Manny, thank you.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to CBS Mornings on the go ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.